Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is Ellie Steele. And tonight we're going to do a, we have an interview with Larry Dorman, the public relations director for AFSCME Union. And we're going to talk a bit about, we discuss the national employment situations, the union situations, and how things are going, and some of the and Obama policies and so on. And we get into it's an interesting discussion with Larry, and I think you'll enjoy it. Also, Lila and I, this is a repeat from last night's WQQQ.com or WQQQ 103.3 FM show, our flagship program, wanted to. The news that we got a lot of interesting stuff that we covered last night, and I wanted to make sure that that was in our archives. So that's why I always replay these interviews. So please enjoy, we'll be back after.
Activist post, Bono and Bill Gates backed the Global Health Charity, exposed as a fraud. What institutions can you trust these days with your donations? The Associated Press reported today that the $21.7 billion global fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria is a fraud, where at least two-thirds of the funds were pocketed and donated medicines were sold on the black market for profit. The prestigious development fund is backed by celebrities like Bono, politicians like French President Sarkozy, and a cool $150 million from Bill and Melinda Gates. The AP wrote that the fund has been a darling of the power set, and that will hold the World Economic Forum in the Swiss mountain village of Davos this week. Though many of the contributors to this fund likely had good intentions for donations, it seems that the fund of this size was too big to succeed and that they are ripe for corruption. The fund spokesman, John Ludden, said, "We would contend that we do not have any corruption problems that are significantly different in scale or nature to any other international financing institution." They must be comparing themselves to banks. In other words, the benchmark is staying on par with the corruption levels of other major institutions around the world, which more than anything else is an indictment of any large organization run by the establishment. Seeking to save their reputation, the fund's general inspector, John Paysons, claims that it is safe to donate to them above other charities because they have a corruption investigation mechanism where others do not. So we should donate our hard-earned money to them precisely because they are proven fraudsters versus others who have successfully hidden their fraud. Great. In a stunning reversal of blame, the article ends with Homi Karasis, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute and former chief economist of the World Bank, chastising people who withhold donations, but just simply withdrawing donations, I do believe, would condemn millions of people who are not involved in the corruption to terrible fates. Excuse me. So it's the Global Fund, folks. It's been exposed as a fraud. Can you imagine? Two-thirds of it just sort of fritters away. Who knows how much even really helps people?
That's,
and I wanted
I
to mention that,
that
again.
That's the one that's inoculating all these people with bogus AIDS vaccines that are, you know, that Bill Gates said he loves vaccines because, you know, he's seeing a major drop in population, you know, in the
third
world.
That would tell you something, folks,
you know,
wouldn't it?
From their vaccination efforts. So they it's killing people off, and that's the concept that they're trying to promote with this fund. So it's like, you know, we've talked about a lot of this on the air before, and we continue to.
But I just wanted to repeat
that. Yeah, I thought it was very important. Yeah, that's these guys are frauds, you know, and they've been.
So think twice before you donate.
Yeah.
At least to them.
Here's another fraud.
Yeah, this guy's probably the biggest fraud that ever frauded anybody. I mean, he makes Madoff look like a hack. This guy, Feinberg, this is from Common Dreams. Denied, deceived, delayed by BP. Gulf residents are on their knees for recompense. Outraged Gulf oil, Gulf Coast residents say BP's compensation fund administrator is denying their claims. This is by Dar Jamal.
It's actually from Al Jazeera.
Well, yeah, Al Jazeera, but Dar Jamal writes for them, you know, as well. It was first published by Al Jazeera. I just got off the phone with Feinberg's people, and I'm really upset, says seafood merchant Michel Chausseri from Barataria, Louisiana. Her business, which sells wholesale and retail crabs, has not provided her with an income since the end of May, and her home is being foreclosed. Attorney Kenneth Feinberg's Washington-based firm, Feinberg Rosen, has been given $850,000 a month by BP to administer $20 billion compensation fund and claims process. I thought it was $40 billion. Wasn't it a $40 billion fund?
I don't know.
It suddenly got reduced to $20 billion? I thought it was $40 billion. All right. Compensation fund and claims to the process for Gulf residents and fishermen affected by the Deepwater Horizon explosion last April. The Gulf Coast Claims Facility, which Feinberg manages, was set up after negotiations between BP and the Obama administration. But over recent months, there have been growing concerns about the coast residents that Feinberg is limiting compensation funds to claimants in order to decrease BP's liability. Late last month, Feinberg told Bloomberg Television that he anticipates that about half of the $20 billion fund should be enough to cover claims for economic losses. It remains to be seen, but I would hope that half that money would be more than enough to pay for all the claims, he said. Well, grade F. Gives him a grade F. Chaucer is angry. Kenneth Feinberg told me personally I had a legitimate claim, and that he was going to personally look into the claim and see what I why I wasn't being paid. And she explains, and adding that one of Feinberg's colleagues gave her his personal number and promised to help. I told Feinberg's man that I know strippers who have gotten money. So if I took off my clothes and worked in a bar, I'd have been paid. But since I have a seafood business, I haven't been paid. The really sad part is that my story is not isolated, Chaucer adds. There are loads of us, and they are all in the same predicament as I am. Rudy Toller from Gulfport, Mississippi, is a fourth-generation fisherman. He submitted 62 pages of documentation to the GCCF, but says, my claim got denied on December 4th with about 100,000 others. Other people, and most of the claims that have been paid are temporary emergency payments. You've got 30% of the claims, Gulf Shore City Councilman Jason Dykin told Feinberg at a recent meeting in Gulf Shores, Alabama. 70% of the claims have not been paid. Where I went to school, that's an F. The amount paid out averages nearly $16,000 per claimant, but according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the 2009 poverty threshold for a family of three was $18,310.
So they're being paid $16,000,
which is
below even poverty level.
$2,300.
These are family people.
Yeah, right. This is BP's,
generous.
Bull crap company here. And with mounting problems for an escalating health crisis and decimated fishing and tourist industries, many consider this an adequate amount of compensation for their loss of livelihood. And Feinberg has recently been on tour of the Gulf Coast, holding public forums where he has often been faced with throngs of engaged residents and fishermen. While Feinberg admits that mistakes have been made in processing claims, he has also said that many claims lack sufficient documentation to warrant payment. I'm trying to do the right thing, Feinberg said. This is an unprecedented job. And there were thousands and thousands and thousands of claims. But we're getting through them, and the money is going out. And during his recent visit to the Gulf, Feinberg said, "I will bend over backwards to pay claims." But large numbers of Gulf residents and fishermen beg to differ. While they have to bend over. I just added that.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I read that article. I don't remember reading.
Bend over backwards, but they got to bend over. Yeah, take it up there.
I didn't read that. Okay, a little insertion there by you.
A little editing.
Okay.
Anyway, late last week, I spoke up at a town hall meeting in Bay State Louis. Louisiana, and Feinberg told me to give him a number and information, and he would personally take care of it, Fuller says. Here it is a week later, and I've not heard from him. You can't get answers from nobody, nobody. Now, I'm 15 days past due on my rent. It don't seem right to me. And it goes on, but circumventing U.S. law, Feinberg's claims operation is now offering three options to claimants. Final settlements for all present and future damages that require the claimant to agree not to seek future compensation or sue anyone involved in the last year's oil spill, which is bull.
They're not allowed to do that.
No.
It's against the law to require people to do that.
Okay.
They're desperate. Of course they're going to take the money and sign anything.
Sure. You know, bend over, boys. And, like, smaller interim claims that do not require a lawsuit waiver, quick payments of $5,000 for individuals or $25,000 for businesses that require a lawsuit waiver, but unlike final or interim payments, do not call for financial documentation. Only those approved last year for emergency claims can take a quick payment. All right. And finally, the attorney, Brian Donovan, with Donovan Law Group in Tampa, Florida, believes Feinberg is simply doing what he is being paid to do by BP. He's doing his job, Donovan said. Feinberg is a defense attorney representing BP. To think otherwise is being foolish. As a defense attorney, he's doing a great job for BP, but they are saying go with us or sue us. And Donovan has written, in lieu of ensuring the BP oil spill victims are made whole, the primary goal of GCCF and Feinberg is the limitation of BP's liability via the systematic postponement, reduction, and denial of claims under BP. Victims of the BP oil spill must understand that Administrator Feinberg is merely a defense attorney zealously advocating on behalf of his client, BP. And contrary to what Feinberg is telling claim applicants, according to Donovan, under the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, a victim of the BP oil spill must first present a claim for damages to BP and wait 90 days. If he or she is not paid or accepts a lesser amount, that does not preclude the victim from pursuing future compensation. In addition, the GCCF Feinberg requirement that a claimant sign a general release of all rights and claim is contrary to the OPA. As said, the OPA was signed into law in 1990, and provided statutory authorization and funding necessary for the oil spill liability trust. All right, and it goes on. Now, it's a long article, but it's a very good one, and I'd suggest to people to go to it. It's commondreams.org, and it's called Denied, Deceived, Delayed by BP. All right.
Yeah, we never hear a word about that anymore. It's kind of gone right out of the news.
Yeah, that's why it's important to keep it going. Somebody
needs to remember that.
As far as everyone's concerned on the mainstream media, it's like, hey, you know.
Been there, done that. Didn't
let's go
care.
Have some shrimp, boys. You know,
yep.
Let's cook some shrimps. Yes.
You wouldn't think we had any problems down there. You wouldn't think we had a war going on. And you wouldn't think that veterans coming home were ill.
But I'll tell you something. You know, now that the Mardi Gras season is upon us, February we're going to start seeing. We'll see what kind of coverage they give to New Orleans and to the Gulf Coast now.
Be interesting.
It'll probably be nothing. All right. Like, what? You know, Mardi Gras, what's that? I mean, they didn't do anything in Louisiana. They left it devastated. You know, it's like, I don't know. Folks, you know, if you believe these boys, you got this this clown going on in the air tonight at 9 o'clock. You're going to give a big economic, you know, speech, all right? And he just hired What he did, he hired this guy for, I think he, I might have been mistaken tonight, but I, a former guy from GE,
mm-hmm.
All right, who was, you know, the president or chairman or CEO.
CEO. Yep.
Of General Electric, I think.
That sounds right.
But he hired him and some other guy.
I don't know his name.
And I'll leave that because I may be wrong.
Okay.
But I didn't.
But anyway, he hired someone.
He hired two major clowns today.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm right, as is GE, GE is responsible for 2/3 of all the brownfields in this country. All right, not to mention all the pollution around the world that they've caused.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not only that, they finally gave up. They sold Comcast. They sold, NBC to Comcast recently. So they don't own anything. They don't own the entertainment world of NBC Universal anymore. Yeah, that's interesting, I thought.
Yeah, I did too.
Now Comcast is, you know, the largest in the world, largest cable operator.
You wonder if they have the same board of directors, though. You wonder really
who's
involved in that. Before you forget, though, Lee, I want to mention that we need a word from our sponsor.
Well, I thought we'd do that right before we bring them up. What do you think?
Well, I would do it now.
Well, you would do it now, but I would do it later because I think it's so appropriate to do it later. No? Okay. Anyway, we will go to that in a minute. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Let me make sure 42 seconds to be exact.
All right.
All right. So in 42 seconds, why don't you read something unbelievable?
I'll read something very quick. I received an urgent alert from Jeffrey Smith today about a dangerous situation taking place right now in the International Codex Conference. The U.S. is attempting to push its agenda to censor all GMO labeling of foods everywhere around the world. The world would result in a global GM cover-up as consumers are left in the dark about whether their food and grocery products are genetically modified or not. Please understand that the U.S. is attempting to outlaw non-GMO labeling of foods, thereby making it illegal for non-GMO food product to ever claim non-GMO on the label. If the U.S. succeeds in this global GMO cover-up, the FDA could seize any products in the U.S. that make the non-GMO claims. Additionally, the U.S. could file lawsuits throughout the World Trade Organization against any country that allows non-GMO labeling on claims or claims on its products. Why is the U.S. pursuing such a devious and sinister course of action? Because, as you well know, virtually the entire federal government caters to the financial interests of powerful corporations. And these include the big ag giants like Monsanto that want to patent all the seeds while destroying the non-genetically modified movement. They want to turn non-GMO foods into violations of the law and thereby strip all such products from store shelves. They want to keep American consumers left in the dark, ignorant of the real dangers possessed by genetically modified foods. And, of course, they want to dominate the entire U.S. food supply with their toxic GMO crops. These powerful, dangerous corporations are willing to do anything to achieve their global agenda, including forcing GMO censorship on the entire world. They might just get away with it unless you join in speaking up right now to oppose this devious action. Please go to naturalnews.com. And you can read this article for yourself by Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. GMO alert. U.S. is attempting global censorship of GMO food labeling.
Right. There's one other thing on GMO I wanted to bring up, which before we go to the break here, to the commercial, to check out the non-GMO shopping guide. I thought this was really important because...
Mm-hmm.
The nonprofit Center for Food Safety offers a fantastic free non-GMO shopping guide available at non-GMOshoppingguide.com. All right, let me repeat that: non-GMOshoppingguide.com, and check it out. There you can learn which products are truly non-GMO, and you can learn how to avoid products that are most likely made with GMOs. It teaches you to avoid corn, soybeans, canola, and cottonseed ingredients, also other things, among other things. It's sponsored by some of the most responsible natural product companies in the business, Nutiva, Nature's Path, Strauss, Woodstock Farms, and others. So, again, non-GMO shopping guide.
Let me just add this to what you've said. The American Academy of Environmental Medicines has issued a warning urging the public to avoid genetically modified foods and also called for a moratorium on GMOs until long-term independent studies can prove their safety. This group has called for required labeling of foods that contain GMOs, a move that has been strongly opposed by the Food and Drug Administration and big biotechs, which cooperatively purport that consumers should not have the right to know whether or not the foods they buy come from traditionally bred or genetically engineered sources. While urging for more independent studies, the AAEM paper cites its own studies alleging that genetically modified foods cause serious adverse health effects, and these can include rapid aging, severe alterations to the major bodily organs, infertility, immune problems, gastrointestinal dysfunction, and the disruption to proper insulin regulation, among others. Many doctors are warning their patients to avoid GMOs. So, Leo.
Yep.
What did you think about that?
I agree with you fully, because this is another follow-up. We had a couple on this, but it says 10 facts you need to know about GMOs. And another, GMO lies, deliberate misuse of term, genetically modified, designed to mislead people. All right. But the 10 facts you need to know about GMOs is GMOs are created through artificial genetic engineering of plant DNA, usually through inserting animal genes into plants. All right. And genetic selection, in contrast, is a natural process whereby people plant seeds generation after generation from their crops that demonstrate desirable characteristics. This is how wheat, corn, and other crops were developed over centuries of seed selection. The GMO industry uses seed terminator technology to forbid seed saving and planting, therefore forcing farmers to buy seeds year after year, creating a seed monopoly and a single point of blood of control for food. And people who promote GMOs are engaged in crimes against humanity and crimes against nature. They promote dangerous technologies that threaten the future of life on Earth by causing genetic pollution and a sharp loss of seed diversity. GMOs have been linked to at least 200,000 suicides in India over the past decade due to failed crops. The GMO industry has financially taken over much of the mainstream media, politicians, and science journals. And they will not stop until they achieve complete control over the world food supply, enslaving humanity in a food monopoly. And GMOs cause genetic pollution that damage other crops and ultimately threaten the reproductive viability of crops in the long term. The future of food is jeopardized by GMOs. The GMO industry is now attempting to brand all opponents of GMO as unscientific by claiming that GMO equals science, and therefore anyone who opposes GMOs is automatically an opponent of science. And the GMO push into Europe is a confirmed conspiracy involving U.S. officials and GMO corporations, as revealed in the WikiLeaks cable that the mainstream media has still refused to report. And the next great food famine and mass starvation will undoubtedly be caused by GMOs. And yet the industry claims that GMOs will save the planet from starvation. Only in a crooked, corrupt world could an industry claim to be saving the world while actually enslaving the world. And you can get all this on naturalnews.com. I really, really urge you to go to that site. And we'll go to this.
Yeah, just quickly, I wanted to mention something that an article by Ellen Brown. Remember, she was our guest, Public Banking in America, Washington State joined
she was with us last week.
Nationwide movement. Remember, the folks at home, just to refresh your memory, she talked about North Dakota was a model state for having their own banks so that they weren't paying a large amount of interest on money borrowed. And I want people to know bills were introduced on January 18th in both the House and Senate of the Washington State Legislature, adding Washington to the growing number of states now actively moving to create a public banking facility. Among the other states that have legislation being proposed or studied include Illinois, Virginia, Hawaii, our neighbor Massachusetts, Maryland, Florida, Michigan, Oregon, California, and others. The effort in Washington State draws heavily on the success of the 92-year-old Bank of North Dakota, currently the only statewide publicly owned U.S. bank. The Bank of North Dakota has helped North Dakota escape the looming budgetary disaster facing other states. In 2009, North Dakota sported the largest budget surplus it had ever had. So I would urge you, New York residents, Massachusetts residents, and Connecticut residents, to urge your representatives or senators or write to your governor and tell him or her that the answer is public banking for your state. I already alerted my representative last year to this. For some reason, she didn't really take me seriously, but maybe she will now.
Yeah, as soon as it sweeps the nation, of course, you know, but I think that's going to happen, and we'll keep on that. We're going to go quickly to a commercial break, but I wanted to mention we got Larry Dorman, public affairs coordinator for the AFSCME Union, coming up right after this, so bear with us. Hang on. Proud to serve you. They keep our streets and parks clean.
They make our schools a great place to learn.
They keep violent felons out of our community.
They even help our children get to school safe and on time.
They are the 35,000 public service employees represented by Council 4.
These employees are dedicated and efficient.
They are accountable to Connecticut taxpayers. That means they don't work for privatized agencies that may hire substandard non-union workers.
Companies like these are constantly in the headlines with their corruption scandals, which cost taxpayers millions.
That's why it's important to keep public services in public hands with people who work hard around Connecticut and around the clock.
On the state and the local level.
Public service employees are proud to serve you every single day.
Find out more at council4.org. Council 4, AFSCME, a union for all. This ad is brought to you by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. This union is affiliated with the AFL-CIO. Hey, we thank AFSCME for that support. And while Leo is getting our guest,
I'll get Larry
on the phone, I just wanted to mention from the LATimes.com, Santa Barbara seeks to, that's a city, Santa Barbara, seeks to turn the tables on the homeless.
This is how they treat the homeless.
Officials hope to realign sidewalk benches so that pedestrians can avoid encounters with a homeless. And I agree with this last statement. Some say the money would be better spent on aiding the needy. I would agree with that. Cities have tried many ways to move panhandlers and vagrants out of the prime shopping districts, but Santa Barbara believes it has a new angle, 90 degrees. Using $50,000 in redevelopment funds, the city is planning to turn 14 benches perpendicular to the State Street storefronts they now face. The idea is to make it more difficult for beggars to establish contact with passerbys, officials said. They'll be sitting with their backs to half the people coming and going on the sidewalk, a supervisor for the city's, said Mark Aguilar, a supervisor for the city's redevelopment agency. They'll have half the potential contacts with the public. It might not be financially beneficial for them. Can you imagine it costs $50,000? To turn 14 benches perpendicular. To discourage prolonged stays, Aguilar said workers will also remove the backs from several benches on a two-block stretch of the city's most vibrant commercial thoroughfare. If the pilot program succeeds, it may extend the length of the street, where crowds of students and well-heeled tourists from around the world amble into upscale stores and restaurants. The idea, which originated with the Santa Barbara Downtown Organization, a business group, has again focused attention on Santa Barbara's effort to deal with its sizable homeless population. That's amazing because Santa Barbara is one of the richest places I've ever been to, and the people are very well healed there. I was only there as a tourist. If I remember correctly, I could hardly afford to buy a hamburger there. It was very expensive place, very beautiful place. And there's a stark contrast between the homeless and the wealthy there, obviously, because very expensive place to live. So that's from the LA Times, and I think they would do better to help the homeless rather than make efforts to prevent them from having eye contact with residents and with better healed residents of Santa Barbara. That's my own opinion. And Leo was busy getting Larry on the phone. I don't know what the story is there. He's trying to get him on the phone. We'll see if we can. No luck there. What happened there, Leo? Try again. See what's going on. Here's a couple of facts. The union sees sharp membership declines. That's probably because so many jobs have been lost. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported Friday that unions lost 612,000 members in 2010. Dropping the unionized share of the workforce to 11.9% from 12.3%.
Actually, I'd rather call you if you want to.
There's no doubt that did union membership help workers escape layoffs? Mayors see no end to hard choices for cities. We're going to be able to get him?
Yeah, Larry, he just pulled into his driveway and he got hung up in a meeting, and so give him about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. We'll give him the 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
There's no doubt this is the mayors see no end to hard choices for cities. There's no doubt that state and local governments are now under fiscal duress, but public service worker pensions are not to blame. Lee Saunders, the Secretary Treasurer of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, said. Labor worries about a new head of Obama jobs panel. President Obama's choice of Jeffrey Immelt, the chairman and chief executive of General Electric, you were trying to remember, to lead the country's efforts to stoke job growth is the latest in a string of worrisome developments in the eyes of labor. Well, we're going to talk to Larry a little bit about
that they would take General Electric chairman. I mean, since General Electric is not only are they... They were involved with nuclear arms, creating nuclear weapons, but there were still major weapons manufacturers, as well as making your general appliances, for crying out loud, all right, and every other god awful thing. And I recall a number of issues that they were being sued all over the country, in different areas, because they had such large, they were responsible for the greatest number of brownfields, in the United States, creating these horrible chemicals.
Wasn't the chairman of GE? Wasn't he very proud of getting rid of all kinds of employees?
That was Jack Welch, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't that his claim to fame that he fired a lot of people?
He fired the bottom 20%. So immediately he walked in the door and you're gone. But Welch is out of there. But
he's still revered.
Not by anybody who knows him. Yeah. Yeah, he's a hatchet. He's a hatchet man, and he's I don't know if you ever read any bio on this guy. And he's a schmuck.
I thought so.
Yeah, he comes in. What kind of guy is this? He believed. I remember him saying he believed that the bottom 20% of any company should be fired. That was his policy. So,
oh really?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So whatever that is. So.
I want to ask. Larry. I want to ask Larry about this choice of Jeff Immelt and what he thinks and what Labor's going to do about it. How we're going to keep an eye on this guy.
I'm very curious and to see what kind of shenanigans. But I don't trust Obama anymore. I just don't.
Mm-mm.
And
I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to his address. But I know one of the things that Labor is looking for.
I'm more curious how many Republicans and Democrats will be holding hands and sitting next to each other, without carrying guns.
While
carrying their concealed weapons.
Oh, yeah. There was a big whining and crying about that.
What an incredible joke. Yeah, our government, folks, is
government is fine. It's some of those people in the government that I wonder about.
Yeah, you get the Boner and there were a couple other wing nuts out there that are just beyond.
Every time there's a crisis, Boehner cries.
Yeah, and then they get this Cantor. I mean, he's one of the nuttiest nuts I've ever seen. I mean, you might as well put him up as the poster boy for Israel, okay? Because he went on. First thing he stated, he put Israel before the United States. He actually said that.
Oh, I know.
I mean, what kind of a piece of work is this guy? You know, and what kind of you?
I think those are treasonous words.
They are. You know,
what about the oath of office?
Yeah.
Doesn't that count for anything?
I saw him say that on C-SPAN. What kind of a piece of work is this guy? And yet they got him all over the place. You know, it's just a hard. I mean, these are.
Well,
we
have one of the most manipulated medias in the world.
I just can't handle it. I'm going to go get Larry.
Okay.
So,
one of the things I think that I had read that unions are looking for is a plan to fix the infrastructure and some commitment by Obama for that. I'd like to bring that up with Larry too. Is that so? And just what are we looking for in a plan on infrastructure? So I want to talk to him about that.
All right.
And I want to talk to him about the choice of Jeffrey Immelt, what he thinks about that. Is Larry with us?
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, good evening, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Sorry I'm late. It was speeding back from a meeting in New Haven. So.
That's quite all right. I hope you came back safely. That's really what counts.
I sure did.
Oh, good. I wanted to get right to it. I know that there's a speech by Obama on, and you'll get a chance to listen to that.
I thought it was going to be on at 7. For some reason, I heard something.
I don't know why Leo thought
I didn't have the heart to let you down.
I know.
Barring any,
that's right.
ESPN, ESP skills, I wouldn't be able to tell you about Obama's.
But one of the things that I wanted to bring up and which concerned both Leo and myself, and it was also in your Council for a Media Center, and that was President Obama's choice of Jeffrey Immelt to be the to lead the country's effort to stroke job growth. I was kind of concerned about that. What do you think? Because he's a former chairman.
I apologize. You faded in and out. You're talking about his choice for the jobs panel?
Yeah, Jeffrey Immelt.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? I see it as a problem.
It sends a slightly troubling signal to organized labor and to working people, given Immelt's kind of corporate privateer and profiteer background.
Mm.
So, could have lived with a better choice.
Was there someone that labor supported that you were disappointed that wasn't chosen for that job?
I don't know that, there were specific candidates that organized labor was backing. I just think that there was an expectation that it wouldn't be someone who comes from the same corporate community that in some part has played a significant role in the downturn. Got to do a little better.
I thought it was an odd choice.
Jobs, you need to have people who have a broader perspective. Perspective, and by that I mean a perspective that includes the needs and the concerns and the interests of working families. So,
I was looking at this guy as, when they picked him up, General Electric is probably one of the
bad
most
track records.
It is a pirate of a company. But it's responsible for over 2/3 of all the brownfields in the country. All of the polluted brownfields Okay, this guy's got a horrendous reputation. Also, it builds weapons. Okay, it got out of the nuclear weapon industry, but it's still building conventional weapons. I don't know if it has any active unions or has any union involvement in their companies at all, but
kind of a deadly company.
But it's just so large, and it's almost uncontrollable. I mean, they just sold off NBC,
right.
Universal, which was I didn't personally like that they sold it off to Comcast. I thought that was not a good move. But
for the public,
yeah. But, you know, what are you going to do? Well, what's your opinion on that, on GE as a company?
Again, you know, GE is the, I think you just kind of said it pretty eloquently. You know, GE symbolizes a lot of, you know, what's wrong with
the worst,
from the standpoint of how workers are treated, from the standpoint of the environmental concerns, et cetera, et cetera. So, like I said, I think we have a, you know, I think it's a troubling selection.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about this earlier, but Jack Welch, who was the former chairman there, his whole philosophy was, you know, fire the bottom 20% of the company.
Right. Well,
yeah,
exactly.
Remember that? Get rid of the bottom 20%. You know, you can operate on 80%, you know. It's like
that was his claim to fame, and
yeah.
I didn't think much of that.
Yeah, he'd walk into a company and say, you're fired, get out of here. You know, that's it. Yeah, so he was a wonderful guy.
Well, we'll see what happens there, but I was wondering...
But before you ask that, what do you think of that? Am I correct there? I mean, that kind of hatchet man policy? I mean, do they have any unions in GE?
GE's... branches do, you know, they have operations that are unionized, and but overall, no, they're not a union friendly company,
right.
Not at all. So
okay. I wanted to ask what labor is looking for in President Obama's speech tonight. Is there anything in particular that you're going to be listening for? As
well, you know, we're it's a great question because we're looking for a sense that there's a plan.
Yeah.
And a plan that specifically is going to pull us out of this economic mess that he admittedly inherited.
Mm-hmm.
And a plan that's going to focus on putting working folks back to work and keeping them in work or putting them to work. So we're looking for something that isn't necessarily good for corporate America and for Wall Street investors. We're looking to hear him outline what is he going to do, whether it's health care, whether it's pensions, whether it's job creation, whether it's trade, whether it's protecting Social Security. We need to hear some signals that working families have not been forgotten and won't be forgotten.
Do you have some sense that he's going to address this at all?
I think he will.
I think he will. Okay.
What specific proposals and ideas he has. Obviously, I'm not really privy to that, but, these are difficult times, and we're terribly concerned by what we see happening because from the federal level down to the local level, there's been this real headlong rush to demonize workers in general and public employees in particular.
Yeah, we're really taking a hit for that.
The reason that's happening is interrupt myself and give you a quick anecdote. I love watching Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
He was trying to prod and kid with the former governor of New Jersey, Christine Todd Whitman, who's a dyed-in-the-wool Republican. So, he said, how did we get in this mess? And she said, well, pensions and health care. Now, the elected officials, certainly, the Democrats need to be saying it more. The president needs to be saying more. Your pension health care benefits, Lila, and mine, and the people we represent are not the reason we're in this economic morass.
Absolutely not.
We're in it because of the Bush tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
We're in it because of a massive military run-up in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
We're it because of Wall Street and Wall Street bankers and investors. And that's what got us where we are, you know, not the sanitation worker or the park
but you forget.
Or professional or the school custodian trying to earn a decent living and provide good services.
I
give you that anecdote because the Republicans and the right are so disciplined now.
No, but you forgot. You forgot that Christy Todd Whitman's real name is Gag Lady. I mean, she was the one that said it was okay to breathe the air 2 days after the 911.
This is one
nasty piece of work, this lady.
Oh, you know, she's not there saying, you know, it's public employee pensions.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The ones that she nearly killed and made sick by her irresponsible declaration that the air was safe to breathe.
Yeah,
it's amazing, you know, kind of the forgetfulness.
It's staggering.
How anyone could forget her? I remember that so clearly, that she said everything was fine, people went down there, volunteered their time, then they got sick, and then they didn't want to compensate them or take care of them.
And then you get the Republicans standing up there, you know, King and the boys saying that, you know, rejecting the their health claim bill, you know?
Right.
I mean,
right.
That is one sick, sick organization. These Republicans are a sick breed of people. I'm sorry, man.
Their ability to capitalize on this kind of
amnesia,
and that's why I brought her up. You know,
yeah.
And you know,
part of that right wing message machine that's getting out there and saying public employees and unions are the reason.
The other thing that kills me, Larry, is they talk about, in quotes, entitlement programs. You know, they talk about entitlement programs. We've paid for all those.
Right.
That's not coming for free, folks. We pay for it out of your paycheck.
Yeah, I mean, for your entire working life.
You know, the Republicans act as if you're getting something for free.
Yeah, and they're very shrewd, very manipulative, and very cynical in their use of words.
Oh, yeah.
So when you use words like entitlement, it leads the television viewer, the newspaper reader, the radio listener, or the internet surfer to infer that, as you just said, you know, it's something that people get for free, but that we, that the taxpayers had to pay the bill for. And, you know, I would love for a lot of these Tea Party types to forswear the benefits they're receiving.
I would, too. I think that would be the way to go,
Anything else for Social Security.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I found it very amusing. I wish I had the article at hand, but it was right in January that we got it, Larry. And it was these Tea Party people coming into the Congress wanting to know what their health benefits were and that they didn't want to miss 1 hour of their benefits or day. They wanted them right the day they got there.
They're upset that their health benefits hadn't kicked in yet, you know.
Look, I prefer not to be participating in a race to the bottom. I don't want to take away benefits from members of Congress. But more importantly, I don't want to see, for example, your benefits taken away.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, they're not taking – I don't want to take away the benefits. All I'm saying is that these are the Republicans that didn't like – that voted against health care and wanted everybody – you know, wanted to repeal it. Okay, as soon as they got into Congress.
But they were.
And the first thing they asked for when they got into Congress was, where the hell am I, a health care bill? You know?
Where are my benefits? That was the point I was trying to make.
They were
concerned about their own benefits, but they didn't seem to care whether their constituency had any access to health care.
That's right.
Part of this cynical, manipulative, dangerous
group of people that are in there now.
Push to say that the problem is the local town worker or the state employee who has decent benefits.
Mm-hmm.
The problem isn't that too many people are losing their benefits. The problem isn't that Wall Street and big business got us into this mess. The problem is that rich people have just gotten completely off the hook in terms of paying their fair share.
Mm-hmm.
Progressive taxes, but none of those things are the problems. They have made the problems our fault, and it's a very alarming. And again, I point to Governor EPA there from New Jersey, Whitman, who didn't skip a beat in saying that health care and pensions are the problem. Now, of course, she has a very nice pension because she was governor of New Jersey, and then she was a federal cabinet head. So I don't see her racing the line to give up her benefits.
Oh, of course not. It's just like the wage freeze in that Congress passed for federal employees.
Right, it hasn't been enacted yet, but.
But that is going to affect all federal employees except judges. And Congress and anybody that works for, like, a congressman.
Now, isn't that a joke? Or,
not
I mean,
the answer. Again, you know.
That is a joke.
A sacrifice. Who are they asking to sacrifice?
Right.
Well, they certainly don't sacrifice, do they? It's okay for you to sacrifice, but not them. It's just fascinating. But
yeah,
anyway.
You know, and I.
Go ahead.
That really is sort of this, you know, kind of. This is the subtext to, in the context of what's going on with the State of the Union speech. You know, we're in a very severe crisis, and the message has been turned against everyday working people, and that's frightening. And that's why it was a great question that you asked me out of the gate. If working people are having trouble, and if working people are struggling to pay their bills, to keep their jobs, to provide for their children, why is the head of a company, GE, legendary for laying off thousands of employees to inflate its stock price, legendary for giving its executives multi-million-dollar salaries,
legendary for destroying the environment,
offshoring production,
degrading
the environment?
Yeah.
So you're taking a GE executive and saying, here, you know, head up the jobs panel. I'm not optimistic.
No.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, the fox in the hen house.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Bring in place the person who helped contribute to the situation.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely. The other thing I just wanted to mention quickly is Malloy says bankruptcy is not an option for Connecticut. I hadn't realized how large our debt is here in Connecticut.
The deficit now stands at about $3.7 billion.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was so large.
Fiscal year. But, you know, bankruptcy, not a good idea.
No, and he's against that.
Actually, heartening to hear Malloy say that.
We just read this article tonight on public banking.
Yep.
And that to us is the way to go. Ellen Brown, who we've had on a number of times, but she's really a national advocate for it. And, you know, to get a state bank
would be perfect.
Is the ideal way to go. That would save every state by doing that. And, you know, all of your state revenue, all of your state monies would go into the state bank. And the state bank would in turn lend.
Yeah, we'd be earning interest for the state.
Yeah.
And when you lend money, that would be earning for the state,
right,
rather than to Bank of America or whoever else where you put your deposits.
And now the state of Washington has just put a bill in to try to get this through, and North Dakota already has one, and they've had it for about 90 years.
Right.
And they're the only state that's solvent. Right.
And our neighboring state, Massachusetts, has a bill, I think, or it's being studied. I passed several articles to my representative over a year ago. She didn't have much interest at the time, but I hope she shows some more interest now. Do you know if anyone is considering public banking for the state of Connecticut?
Well, I don't think that those kinds of constructive ideas are being floated because, and I'm afraid, in part, it's that backlash against the government when, and we've been advocating healthcare pooling for municipalities and small businesses. Somehow it gets painted as, government-run health insurance when it's not. You know, government is the administrative agent, but, you know, you'll have employees, they'll be paid. It's a non-profit kind of mutual company that provides competitive rates. And, I think part of the problem is the public has been stirred into this anti-government frenzy, so that any kind of stimulus spending to create create institutions that would provide stability and opportunity, any kinds of suggestions like that are immediately derided and criticized.
Well, the Republicans
right now, not seeing a lot of it in great demand.
The Republicans today just came out with a statement saying that there wouldn't be any that there wouldn't be any bailouts for the states, no federal bailout, and for that. I don't think, there is no other way for, everything that the states have done so far have led into, huge, huge deficits, okay? So, unless they can take hold of the assets, okay, and stop borrowing money instead, lend the money instead. Okay, they have the perfect right to be the lenders. Get rid of the damn banks and take, and become a
make the profit for
make
yourself.
The profit for yourself, and for the taxpayers. You know what I mean? I would much rather bank with a state run bank. Okay, a solid state run bank than some. Bank America, or some other one that, or some other yo-yo bank that's ready to go under.
Again, the business community, the self-interested, selfish business community.
Well, it's that, but once they realize that, the selfish business in community benefits tremendously from a state-run bank, all right, because they have low interest rates, easy access to funds. The state, all the state would want to do would be. To provide loans, for businesses and infrastructure
that they can't,
and everything
that small businesses can't get right now.
Right, because the banks, these private banks, are holding the monies and aren't lending. So it's like, damn these banks. You don't need them. Just get rid of them. All right, and get a public bank in there, a state-run bank.
It's very difficult, though, I guess, to get these things done in Connecticut. But
I think you get rid of the Federal Reserve as well. That thing should be banished as hell.
Well, there was a thought that the Federal Reserve would bail out the states, but idea was buried.
They'll bail out the other countries through the IMF, mm-hmm. but they won't bail out their own country. You know what I mean?
That's the troubling place we find ourselves in right now.
And the Fed can create as much money as they want. They don't care. There's no
limit on
what they can make.
They get to print money.
That's all they do. They can.
And I believe strongly in my own thesis that there's such a backlash against the. Against government and this demonization that has made it hard for creative ideas like the ones you guys are discussing to be debated, let alone possibly enacted into law.
You can't even get a debate on it, you don't think, huh?
But the silliest thing is that in North Dakota has had one for almost 90 for over 90 years. All right, it got them through the they instituted that before the Great Depression. All right.
It was the only state that
didn't go under,
Right.
And still isn't. But I think they got 4% unemployment, and a surplus. All right.
Now the funny thing is, or maybe it's tragic. It's not funny. is that all we're asking? All our union has said, and I think all you're saying, if I could paraphrase, is that let's make these privateers, these immensely profitable private sector companies compete.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about competition, but the reason they're afraid of the Sustenet healthcare pool is that they're afraid that it will affect the private insurance companies.
Yeah. The public option should have gone through with no problem.
Right.
That should have been an absolute,
that's anti-government backlash. These private companies, let's set up public mutual interests to compete with the private sector. Why is that bad?
Well, I got to question this too. Maybe you can clarify it, but that $750 penalty, okay, that if somebody doesn't have health insurance or buys into the program or something, basically that is the public option, isn't it? Because basically, anybody who's not buying, who doesn't buy into the federal program, or doesn't have the insurance after 2014, okay, is going to be according to the new bill, will have to be pay a fine of $750 a year.
Imposed by the IRS.
Imposed by the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with that in mind, that would be pretty much the same. I think, just because I haven't read all the language in the 2,000-page bill, but to me, if a guy's got to be paid fine, it pays $750, and basically he's getting a public option, isn't he? He's buying into some program.
Yep.
He's buying into some program, and
And again, I keep taking it back. That's
some public option program there.
Right.
He's getting some coverage.
It's not putting people out of business. It's forcing the critics and the profiteers to compete, to kind of play their cards in an open and honest way.
Yeah.
And instead of lavishing millions and millions of ratepayer dollars on their executives, actually funnel that back into the system to provide care.
Yeah.
And this is an example of healthcare.
Well,
issue of the banks, and we've talked about utility deregulation and what a joke that was. You know, their idea of competition, quite frankly, is literary competition.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And prevent government from doing anything to take the side of the consumer. And you know what? It's supposed to be about us, not them.
Yeah.
That's right. And we have to remember there's more of us.
You sound so angry.
Connecticut utility payers are paying the highest utility costs in the country.
Right.
We're paying more for our utilities than anyone else in the country. Now, that's insane.
Right. One of the greatest disincentives to doing business or living in the state are the high utility costs.
Yeah, that drives business right out.
I mean, I'm waiting for my lawyer to come into the DPUC and just with a hatchet, and just get rid of all those guys, because they're all rolling appointees. They're all involved with
hack.
Yeah.
Right.
So, get rid of them and start appointing some decent, normal people,
That would be a great thing. If he only does one thing, if he does that, that would be wonderful, I think.
Absolutely.
And I can't believe... What?
I'd re-elect him. I'd vote for the guy in 4 years if
he'll
be
advocating on the show. I got you.
But anyway, we've come to the end of our time. I can't believe it. And I know you...
I apologize again, and I look forward to talking to you.
That was great.
Let's see how things turn out.
Well, thanks for being available to us.
But
I know it was a busy...
Sorry, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. Good night. Larry's probably going to turn on the State of the Union. I know he's very interested to hear that.
Yeah.
And
so we figure they're probably going to lose a few people about now. But
I can understand that. And Leo, give us a station ID.
Yeah, this is WQQQ 103.3 FM in Sharon, Lakeville, and Millerton. And you're listening to the LA Steel Show. And that was our guest was Larry Dorman, the public affairs coordinator for the AFSCME Union. And
nice guy.
Yeah, and we're going to go to Woody in the ring.
So if you bring up his music.
Yeah, so here we go.
All right, and I want to thank everybody for listening. That was Larry Dorman from the AFSCME Union and council4.org. You can see their website there, and if they have any questions about union issues, they might be able to help you. I wanted to mention, we're not streaming at this point, we're recording, but this is our last week as a one-hour program, or at least formatted such, and we'll be on tomorrow night and Friday night with Georgia Dixon, and then we'll be going into a half-hour program format. And we'll be on Wednesday nights at 6:30 to 7, and Sunday afternoon from 3:30 to 4 p.m. And and possibly an extended time frame there, but we're not particularly really certain how that's going to work out since Blog Talk has changed its formats. So I wanted to
look, just let everybody know that that's what's going on. That's what will be going on. And thanks for listening. And join me tomorrow night when we enter the fourth dimension. Good night.